truck drivers. Here's a safety tip to know before you go. Give bikes 3 feet when passing. Don't pass if you can't. Help us keep New York City streets safer for everyone this holiday season. Visit nyc.gov/TruckSmart.
WBAI New York, stay tuned for Equal Rights and Justice.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and you're listening to Equal Rights and Justice, where we educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for another world is possible, and we are the ones to make it so. And WBAI, the people's megaphone, is instrumental in providing us with the information, the raw facts interwoven with the political theory for creating the beloved community, a system of government that is truly, truly by the people, for the people, a community where equal rights and justice is the operational rule, where poverty, the unequal distribution of wealth, where the plutocrats like giant leeches suck out the wealth we, the people, create by our blood, sweat, and tears, where all forms of bias, disparate treatment, and most certainly militarism, as Dr. Martin Luther King so brilliantly characterized those things, the ideological pillars, if you will, that hold up the capitalist system, come tumbling down like the walls of Jericho for us to erect a new society, the beloved community, where we can truly realize the promise of democracy. Now, no more lies, truth be told. An Equal Rights and Justice special, 9 a.m. to noon, to decolonize the holiday and for a way forward on Thanksgiving. This is the 104th anniversary of the mythical Thanksgiving of 1621. As such, we who wish to decolonize our minds, truth be told, must recognize the genocide of millions of indigenous people of the Americas and the theft of their land over the centuries. But we must as well celebrate their indomitable strength, resistance, and spirituality. Can we, will we reject the mythical narrative of Thanksgiving and focus on the contemporary issues facing Native peoples, such as the crisis of missing and murdered indigenous women, the mass graves of Indian boarding school children, the decades-long unjust incarceration of Leonard Peltier, We must build support for the frontline Indigenous leaders' efforts to protect the land and water, and to take back what was stolen from them, their land, their art, and cultural works that are expressions of their beliefs and how they live their lives and their actual ancestral remains. Indigenous-led movements are building power, and they're leading us towards a liberated future in this moment of climate catastrophe and reckoning. And we must decolonize our minds and support them. Oh, truth be told. Truth be told. Free, free, Leonard Peltier. We must stop cannibalizing the earth which birthed us all. Truth be told, we must decolonize our minds. Remember that on what has been called Thanksgiving, Americans, government offices, businesses, and banks, they all ground to a halt, and in preparation for that day across the country, what, children were taught how to make feather turkey hand puppets, and various events and parades are held to celebrate the occasion. So now, our Indigenous siblings ask, demand, that this day, this D-Day, be looked at really as a day of mourning. And that's what we're here to interrogate. Truth be told. Lies, more lies, and darn lies. It's become common knowledge amongst historians that certainly Columbus, he never discovered America, not least because it is impossible to discover a people and a continent that was already there and thriving with culture. We are overdue to interrogate Thanksgiving, and truth be told, to decolonize the holiday and for a way forward. And we begin with one of the land back leaders. And let's hear from him right now as we do what? Truth be told, decolonize the holiday and for a way forward on Thanksgiving.
And so now I'd like to move on and introduce our next speaker. Demetrius Johnson is a land back organizer with Indian Collective. He is Diné from a community near Ganado, Arizona, named Tolani. Demetrius is also a longstanding lead organizer for the Red Nation and has been a part of many campaigns and front lines advocating for the liberation of Indigenous LGBTQ2+ and working class people. Demetrius owes his political development to strong and inspiring Indigenous women. Thank you, Demetrius, for being here with us today.
Hello, everyone. Yat Shay Demetrius Johnson, Dasha Jine, Todachini Nishle, Ado Sitnanjini Bushishin, Sanjikina Adeshache, Ado Todachini Adeshanele, Twathlana Denasha, Ado Akut Ego Denehestin Nishle. What's up, everyone? My name is Demetrius Johnson. I'm wearing a black shirt. I got long black Navajo hair. I'm 5'10", 235 pounds. I'm just a big brown Navajo man. I'm wearing a red floral scarf too. Okay. So rethinking Thanksgiving, the title of this panel. I can speak for like my generation or like the generations that, you know, are kind of around my age. Going to public school here in the United States, around this time, we're just kids like making hand turkeys, doing coloring books or coloring things that like the first feast, like the cornucopia, the first feast, like around the table, you know, the vibes, like it reenacting like racist, like pilgrim Indian plays. I'm painting the picture. But, you know, that's what I grew up with. But within the past, geez, like 7-10 years, I've seen like this narrative shift of like people, indigenous people, renaming this whack ass holiday from Thanksgiving to no thanks, no giving, thanks taking. Honestly, my favorite one is just no thanks, like no thanks. But that's just, you know, that's this narrative shift, or like this change of the name is because of, you know, our ancestors, our movement elders, people that have worked hard and given their lives to, you know, decolonizing or continuing to hold on to like this our histories, and not the histories that we are taught in the United States, not settler history. And so right now, like, we're also like in this moment of talking about land back. And what does that mean? I mean, it's a movement that comes from indigenous people, and the work for land back is long standing. It started when colonizers first stepped foot on this place and started taking lands and started taking things that weren't theirs. So when we're talking about land back, we're talking about this movement to literally like reclaim land back to indigenous people. But also with that is like reclaiming everything that was stolen from indigenous people. And that includes the narrative, but it also includes, you know, our housing systems, our healthcare systems, our kinship systems, our medicines, our language, everything. Land back encompasses all of that. I think also when we're, you know, with this holiday coming up, this racist holiday, and also just thinking about our movement elders, our ancestors, the people that have paved the way for younger organizers, for the younger, you know, people to step up to this work. I think of this Thursday and our Wampanoag relatives that, you know, have called this Thanksgiving the day of mourning too. And that's not the only land back work that's happening too. Right now I'm calling in from Dakota lands out here in so-called Minneapolis. But the last day I've been seeing like land back work happening in northern Minnesota and in Anishinaabe lands. And it's Winona LaDuke's work and Honor the Earth's work and stopping like Line 3 and, you know, that the work that's going on up here to protect water, to protect land. And they call it the Deep North, right? And also like in homage of like, or like in a reference to like what they call the Deep South, the Deep North is also just as equally racist, against people of color. And of course, against like indigenous people, but during that fight for Line 3, you know, Enbridge created this headquarters out there in one of the racist border towns, Park Rapids. And, you know, Enbridge buys this, Enbridge is an energy company. It's a pipeline company. So they build this headquarters, right, in this racist town. And what does Honor the Earth do? What does Winona LaDuke do? She reclaims this office space. And now it's going to be like a water protectors welcome center. It's going to be a museum. It's going to be a treaty museum. It's going to talk about the original peoples of that place. And also honoring the people that protect the land, protect the water. And that's just like one land back effort. But, you know, for everyone here, like land back is happening wherever you are. And like, this is me just learning in 2 days, day and a half, land back work. And no matter where you are, you're on stolen land, but also land back work is actively happening. We could give you all the resources. We could do all this stuff, but you know what? Just, you know, we got Google. You know, we're able to do this work on ourselves. But I'm also just honored to be in a conversation in a panel with some very respectable people doing land back work in the ways, in the gifts that they were given. Land back work happens in many different ways. And it has to happen in many different ways because we are constantly attacked as Indigenous people in many different ways in this colonial in this colonial structure. But yeah, that's it. Thank you all, and
thank you, Demetrius.
Demetrius Johnson, Land Back. We'll be talking a great deal more about that movement. Let's be honest, though. On the last Thursday of November every year, we celebrate the beginning of a European invasion that ends with the death or relocation of millions of Native people. While many have tried to redefine the meaning of Thanksgiving into a time wherein we cultivate a sense of gratitude, the undeniable truth is that the blood of Native people stains the genesis of the holiday. How did we get here? Let's, truth be told, interrogate the origins of colonization, and we do so now with Dakota filmmaker Sheldon Wolfchild's compelling documentary based on decades of research. Shawnee Lenape scholar Stephen Newcomb, the film tells the story of how little-known Vatican documents of the 15th century resulted in a tragic global momentum, a movement of domination and dehumanization. This led to law systems in the United States and Canada and elsewhere in the world that are still being used against original nations and peoples to this day. Truth be told.
The starting point for all of our original nations and peoples, including our sacred sites and significant and ceremonial places, is our free and independent existence, extending back to the beginning of time through our oral histories and our oral traditions. That free and independent existence means something. It especially means something in the face of systems of domination and dehumanization that were brought here by the monarchies of Christendom in the 15th and 16th and later centuries. What we're going to be examining is the doctrine of discovery, or the doctrine of Christian discovery. The story of the doctrine of Christian discovery is a story of the doctrine of Christian domination and dehumanization. That doctrine is found in documents issued by popes in the Vatican during the 15th century, which declared war on the non-Christian world and instructed Christians to invade, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, to reduce them to perpetual slavery, and to take away all their possessions and property. If that's part of the Christian message, and by us speaking against that somehow makes us anti-Christ because we're against the domination and dehumanization system, then what does that say about Christianity? But if the domination and dehumanization system is not something that Christians and other people believe in or subscribe to, then they should join us in working to abolish and disestablish the system that has resulted in the dehumanization of original nations and peoples throughout the planet and continues to do so to this day.
In June of 1864, a U.S. Senate debate was held concerning the extraordinary amount of money needed to implement U.S. Indian policies. What began as a debate on money matters evolved into a heated debate on the U.S. government's relationship to the Native American nations.
The whole relation between the Indian tribes and the United States is the most ridiculous possible. And I hope someday or other, a gentleman familiar with the subject will bring in a bill abolishing the whole system. I believe the very worst enemies to these people, in many cases, are the men that the government of the United States employs as agents to protect them. Our white people constantly encroach on them and do them great wrong. It's the duty of the United States to protect them.
This glorification of the Indian character and the poetic tale of his wrongs inflicted by this government in the purchase of their lands is a phantom of the poetic brain. We have paid to these Indians and invested for their benefit millions in money and have thus brought to their doors all the arts of a Christian civilization. If they refuse to merge into and become part of the superior race, they must necessarily be destroyed. It is a law of humanity.
We are a different race. It is not that the government has inflicted wrong. It grows out of the case itself. The contact of the two races side by side upon the frontiers of Christian civilization. God, in his providence, is giving this continent to millions of human beings of higher civilization and leading the advanced guard of human and Christian civilization.
No word is more vague and has permitted the commission of more crimes than that of civilization. The histories of all colonies begins with violence, injustice, and shedding of blood. The result is everywhere the same: the disappearance of the native races, des races sauvages, coming into contact with civilized races. Charles Salomon, 1889, 19th century international law scholar. Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery, Stephen T. Newcomb.
When you look at the quote from Senator Harland of Iowa in the clip that we just saw, and you examine the language, what he says is that if the Indians will not merge themselves into a superior race, they must be necessarily destroyed. That's that part of that genocidal principle. And then he says, it is a law of humanity. When you parse that, what you see is actually two different categories, a category of humanity and those outside of that category. The category of humanity considers itself to be a superior race, and the original nations and peoples of this territory, of this continent, of this hemisphere, they actually are considered to exist within a subhuman or a non-human category. And therefore, through that dehumanization process, there's a presumption of a right of domination. And what has been commonly and typically called the doctrine of discovery is actually the doctrine of domination. And whenever you talk about domination, you have a correlative or a corollary of that. So you have what's above, and then you have what's below.
Dr. Luis Rivera Pagan writes the following in his introduction to A Violent Evangelism. Perhaps the main defect of many modern studies of the age, meaning the age of discovery, consists in not recognizing the primacy of the theological discourse in 16th century ideological production. Truly, the Spanish conquerors of the Americas were driven by their quest for God, gold, and glory. But it was the language related to God, theology, that served to rationalize avarice and ambition, not vice versa. It was religion that attempted to sacralize political domination and economic exploitation.
One of the things I wanted to ask you to start out is, how did you come to write the book?
Well, yeah, it was the... the end of the 90s, the end of the 80s, sorry, the end of the 80s. And at that moment, under the leadership of Spain, in all countries of Latin America, there were established committees for the celebration of the 500 years of the discovery of America. And I was concerned about the emphasis on discovery. Because discovery is always a nice word. It's good to discover something, you see. But sometimes the concept of discovery can be used to occlude, to take out of the sight of people what was happening under the concept of discovery. And I was convinced that at the end of the 15th century and at the beginning of the 16th century, theological issues were important. Because the main reason that was given by Spain and by the Pope at that time to consolidate the sovereignty of Spain over this island first and over the rest of this vast continent was to convert and to Christianize the natives. So therefore, one had to take seriously the matters of religion and theological issues in that process. Right now, in our time, when we think about spreading the gospel or doing missionary work, we think about churches preaching. But at the end of the 15th century, they also had the conception of a Christian nation defending the faith or spreading the faith not only by preaching. That's why, for example, when the Pope Alexander VI in May of 1493 decreed those lands were to be possessed by the Kingdom of Castile perpetually, he mentioned that King Fernando and Queen Isabel had done a great thing for Christendom, namely have eliminated, the Pope says, the tyranny of the Saracens infidels. So that the idea that the gospel could be spread by means of war, by means of weapons, was not necessarily a bad idea in the 15th century and the 16th century.
Domination, the language of the papal bulls.
The theme of domination is found in various Vatican documents from the 15th century. For example, in the papal bull of May 4th of 1493, Pope Alexander VI says that it is pleasing to the divine majesty that barbarous nations be subjugated. The Latin word is deprimantur, which means to reduce, to cast down or press down, to hold down. And it also states that it is pleasing to the divine majesty for the Christian empire to be propagated. Pope Alexander VI stated, "We trust in him from whom empires and dominations and all good things proceed." The Holy See of the Catholic Church issued many such documents even before 1493. For example, in 1452, Pope Nicholas V issued a directive to King Alfonso of Portugal to go to the western coast of Africa and to invade, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, to reduce their persons to perpetual slavery, and to take away all their possessions and property. That directive was reissued in 1455, 1456, 1481, 1493, 1506, and 1514. So why was the document called a bull? It had to do with the fact that the document was sealed with wax, and that wax was imprinted with the papal ring and the insignia of the Holy See. From that wax was hung a red silken thread, and at the end of the red thread was a lead ball, and the Latin word for ball is bulla. What these documents demonstrate, though, in terms of the language that was used, is the pattern or the paradigm of domination and dehumanization. And this is very clear by looking closely at the kind of language that was used in those documents. They go back to a root word, domo, in Latin, which is a very unusual and obscure word. And it has seven main meanings: to subjugate, to subdue, to force into subservience, to tame, to domesticate, to cultivate, and to till. To cultivate in Latin is colere, which means to colonize or design. When you take the root of colonize, you have colon, which is the digestive tract of the body politic that is coming in invasively into the lands and territories of indigenous nations and peoples. And that colonizing, digesting activity makes that predator body politic a devouring, consuming body that's coming in invasively on top of the original nations and peoples.
Organic laws.
So when we take the history of these documents that I'm talking about, the papal documents, and we look at how they influence and inform U.S. law, then it's fascinating. There's a book from 1877 called Federal and State Constitutions, Colonial Charters, and Other Organic Laws of the United States. And in that book, it takes each and every one of the states existing in 1877. By the way, the book was published by the U.S. Government Printing Office. But it takes each of those states and it traces the originating documents back to their earliest origins. So in the case of Florida, as an example, the originating documents for the current state of Florida are the prerogatives granted to Columbus by the King and Queen of Spain in 1492 and the Papal Bull of 1493. Only in Latin, by the way. It's not even published in English in that book. And then when you trace that forward, what you find is that all of the states in the South and the Southwest, such as Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, sections of Idaho, they trace back to that same origin. Anywhere that the Spanish crown claimed rights of discovery and domination from the earliest times, that still continues to today. And the United States is considered to be the successor country to the prerogatives granted to Columbus and to the Papal Bull of 1493. So that's the actual organic law of the United States in those areas. But it is even more extensive than that, because it turns out that because Spain had possession of what was called the Louisiana Purchase Territory, the Louisiana colony, from the period of Rome.
The Senecas are an Indian tribe of the Iroquois Nation. Down on the New York, Pennsylvania line, you'll find their reservation. After the U.S. Revolution, Corn Planter was a chief. He told the tribe these men they could trust. That was his true belief. He went down to Independence Hall, and there a treaty signed that promised peace with the USA and Indian rights combined. George Washington gave his signature, the government gave its hand. They said that now and forevermore that this was Indian land. As long as the sun will shine. On the Seneca Reservation, there is much sadness now. Washington's treaty has been broken.
Yeah, that was a beautiful rendition by Johnny Cash, who actually caught hell for doing it on an album that was completely committed to the principles, the ideology, the sensitivities of indigenous people. And that song was written by Peta LaFage. As long as the grass shall grow, this land is Indian land. And Johnny Cash interrogated that and was lambasted. And why? Because we are living in a colonizer's state. That is the origin. That is the founding of this country. Let's be honest. On the last Thursday of November, every year we celebrate. We celebrate the beginning of a European invasion that ends with the death or relocation of millions of native people. And how did we get to that place? Well, we brought you some of the doctrine of discovery, which we will return to begin to understand the ideological principles and origin of the invasion of colonization of peoples of the land, and why we started this morning with land back discussion put forward to us by Demetrius Johnson. We're going to hear more about the land back movement. But indeed, let's be honest, the colonial origins of Thanksgiving, or what many natives often refer to as Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving, is not something to celebrate. While we cannot pinpoint one specific or original Thanksgiving celebration, President Lincoln made it a national holiday in 1863 and conceived it as a national day of Thanksgiving. Pilgrims and Indians weren't included in the tradition until 1890. The national mythos surrounding this holiday does not take into consideration the long and violent history of contact between European settlers, in this case, English pilgrims, Puritans, and indigenous populations that already inhabited the land. It is in these forgotten histories that we see the history of this holiday for what it truly is: English pilgrims, unprepared to survive on the land and unfamiliar with the vegetation, waterways, and other food sources, stranded on Turtle Island, who survive those early winters and ultimately engage in a brutal campaign of colonization, colonialism, and genocidal activity. Well, you are listening to an expanded Equal Rights and Justice Report, where we are asking you to appreciate and learn from the indigenous voices, which we will bring you throughout the course of this Thanksgiving. But in so doing, I want to remind that this is a truly special venue. WBAI, the People's Marathon. And I want you to know that every single thing that we play today comes from long, wonderful, rare documentaries that will be available to you. To what? To, truth be told, interrogate Thanksgiving, but interrogate the origins of this country, and learn that we are rooted in a settler colonialist state. And unless we come to grips with that, we will never root out the white supremacist origins. and debunk the myth of exceptionalism of America and move to a state of equal rights and justice. So I want to tell you quickly, as I want to return to Native voices, that you can call. I want you to get it ready, and then I'll tell you why. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I garbled that a little. I'm going to say it again. 212-209-2950. And ask for Truth Be Told. And Truth Be Told is a glorious, glorious library of 10 full-length documentary films that are not commercially available, all made by and the voices and perspectives of indigenous people, and with a 10-hour audio book by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, An Indigenous People's History of the United States, and then a very special, wondrous piece, which is the music to uplift you as well, of the late, great Jim Pepper. You'll hear his music throughout the morning. An indigenous saxophonist, composer, who fused Indian rhythms in the jazz mode, and his music is just absolutely transformative. So I'm just going to ask you to give real consideration about supporting WBAI as an instrumentality for the voices that are suppressed. They really haven't been voiceless. They've just been maligned, or they've been suppressed by not only conservative, but by liberal media, because it takes us into a different direction as to what we want this society to become and what it really means to have government truly, truly by the people. By the people, for the people. That is a dangerous concept, and we must realize that democracy is not a passive bystander sports. It's a participatory process, and that's what we learn, and that's what we learn from indigenous people. The power paths that they are taking that will change the way we look at energy forever. An Indigenous People's History of the United States. And I want you to know the films that are available are just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Broken Rainbow. The film is announced by saying there's no word for relocation in the Navajo language. To relocate is to disappear and never be seen again. The film Broken Rainbow. The film Power Paths. How America can truly achieve energy independence, an indigenous perspective, an inspiring documentary about how Native American communities are creating new ways to produce clean power as the tribes attempt to restore lands devastated from the impacts of coal mining. The Hopi, the Navajo, and environmental organizations who forced the closure of a major polluting plant in Nevada. Broken Rainbow, Power Paths, the 10-hour audiobook of Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, An Indigenous People's History of the United States, the music of the great saxophonist, indigenous wonder, Jim Pepper. Oh, and there's so much more. You will also get, and I'm just going to tell you our story, the indigenous-led fight to protect Greater Chaco Canyon. The actual struggles, we take you right on the ground to them. And there is more than a word, a film about the Native American-based sports mascots and what indigenous people are doing to fight that and why they're fighting that, why it's such an important issue. Oh, there's more. There's the piece that you just heard from, and that is the Doctrine of Discovery, which gives you the ideological root and basis for settler colonialism and the theft of land. And then there's Fighting Indians, a powerful and moving film about really the capture and contentious landscape that communities navigate when retiring harmful native-themed school mascots while elevating tribe sovereignty and championing native voices. There are 10 full-length featured films that are made by and are the voices of indigenous people. And then there is the soundtrack from the Rethinking Thanksgiving that is dealing primarily with the issue of land back, a major struggle. But we would be remiss, and we do have films on one of the most important leader and humanitarians, and that is now 47 years incarcerated, Leonard Peltier. So all of this is really in the spirit of and dedicated to free Leonard Peltier. And we have the phenomenally important film for us to do what with? To educate and agitate and organize off of, to support indigenous voices and struggles. To what? To free Leonard Peltier. And the history of the American Indian movement, as narrated by the late great leader of the film itself, Dennis Banks. Please do go to your phone and take advantage of Food for Thought and a great library of indigenous films and audio that we can use, because as I said, democracy is not a spectator sport, and we need tools. We need tools to bring to people. We're our families. We're our workmates. We're our faith-based communities. We're our neighbors and community can come together and watch these films and listen and create a new narrative that is based on an accurate reality of the founding of this country, debunk the myth of American exceptionalism, and then move on to what? To equal rights and justice, and in this case, with the voices of the indigenous people. That's the narrative, and that's our rethinking of Thanksgiving. And I want to let you know that this $175 package library education of films, audiobook, and music will give you endless hours of information. And yes, it's uplifting, because the truth is uplifting. From an indigenous perspective, indeed an indigenous people's history of the United States. So all you have to do, because we do have working operators who are standing by to take your calls, you just have to call 212-209-2950 and say, truth be told, truth be told, and you will get the 10-hour audiobook. You will get the music of Jim Pepper. You're going to hear some of it. You're going to want that. And you're going to get these phenomenal films, More Than a Word, Fighting Indians, Our Story, Broken Rainbow, Power Path, the story of Leonard Peltier, the story of the American Indian Movement, oh, and so much more. $175? Well, it's a virtual steal, unlike or like what we've done to indigenous land. But this one's a good steal. I remember when Abby Hoffman was saying, steal this book, because it had a greater purpose. It's something that people should want and get it any way that you can. But get it now by contribution of $175 to support the People's Radio Station, this glorious beacon of more than 62 years, this legacy station, the voice of the people, not because they're voiceless, but because their struggles and their efforts for equal rights and justice have been suppressed by the dominant plutocrats who take our wealth and covet it. Well, you know that. So we have a real job to do. And to do it, these films, this music, this audiobook, which really gives you an indigenous people's history of the United States, it's yours. So we return now. We return and we listen to the Broken Rainbow that sets us up to talk about the land. While you continue to call 212-209-2950, Broken Rainbow.
Center of life to native people. Most of our land has been taken and few of our people remain.
In 1974, Congress passed a law ordering 10,000 Navajo off their land. Land, the government says, belongs to the Hopi tribe. Congress has ordered the Navajo to move by 1986, despite the protests of the traditional Hopi and Navajo people.
Chairman, I'm here today to discuss the tragedy of relocating over 9,000 of my tribal people from their native homeland. More than 75% of the Navajo relocatees will be condemned to a life of misery, poverty, and alienation.
Just how would you have any income if you're forced to move? Do you have any other way of making a living other than livestock raising?
I make my living with the sheep. You don't have to carry them on your back, you just herd them. This is how I live. I will not relocate. If I were offered a new home, I would be a stranger in such a place. I wouldn't know how to operate the heating or the lighting system. Any expense, I'm sure, would be tremendous. How would I pay for these utilities? I have no income and have never been to any school.
Assuming we go through with this destructive effort, how and where would she be relocated on the Navajo reservation?
Senator DeConcini, there is no place on the present Navajo reservation to which she can relocate to carry on the way of life that she has described.
The United States government created reservations for the Navajo and Hopi tribes more than a century ago. Navajo lived near the Hopi villages long before the reservation line was drawn, and the government allowed them to stay until now. Today, the government is spending $500 million to partition the Hopi reservation between the two tribes and to move the Navajo out of the Hopi half. Most of the Navajo are being moved into border towns hundreds of miles from their homeland.
Before moving, I was living very well. The sheep and the cows were like a bank. It was good when I relied on them. Now I fall into hunger. My shoes are all worn out, and that is the truth. Here I'm told to pay for everything, even the water. I owe taxes, too. I just suffer from all the bills.
11, 19 is your change. 10, 11, and 19 cents. Thank you. Have a nice day now.
When Hosteen learned that his hogan had been deliberately burned down, he suffered a stroke. While he was in the hospital, his tract house was repossessed for non-payment of taxes and utility bills. There is no word for relocation in the Navajo language. To relocate is to disappear and never be seen again.
The old people of the earth tell stories. An old woman of the old ways, she said.
Whose culture is fading. It's under all sorts of pressures, which is attempting to adapt gradually, which is making all sorts of compromises, subject to all sorts of stress, that now through this act of Congress is being terminated. It's being invalidated. It's being forced to get off its center, the land. That's the integrating principle of the culture. And I say, why?
Thank you.
enormous quantities of minerals are buried here. On the Navajo reservation alone lie 100 million barrels of oil, 25 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, 80 billion pounds of uranium, and 50 billion tons of coal, by conservative estimates. The energy corporations want the resources under Indian land, and if necessary, the native people will be sacrificed.
The earth ones, they said, our religion is in these lands and skies. Sweet mother, our land's gone to modern worlds, modern lives. The earth weighs ever new ecology.
Since before human memory, winds and waters have sculpted this sacred Indian land and shaped the landscape like no other on earth. For 150,000 moons, Indian prayers have bonded the land and sky. This was home, first for the Anasazi, stargazers and architects of antiquity. The Anasazi designed the blueprint for civilization in North America. Their descendants, the Hopi, are the oldest culture surviving today. The word Hopi means peace, and the Hopi have been a people of peace for thousands of years.
The Hopis are a Pueblo people who live in villages atop the mesas that lie within the center of this disputed area. For centuries, they remained close to the mesas. They farmed plots in outlying areas, never going very far from the mesas because they always needed to be able to return to the villages to participate in the ceremonial life of the tribe.
The Hopi have always lived with religion as the heart of their culture, the axis around which all life turns. Synchronized their energies to the rhythms of the universe. Their rituals are as highly developed as the most intricate mathematical equations. Seeing the world through Hopi eyes is seeing the world in balance. A thousand years ago, the Navajo, or Dene as they call themselves, migrated into the Southwest. According to their mythology, the Navajo came into existence through a circular opening called the Emergence Place. They settled within the four sacred mountains with the Hopi at the center. They, along with the Hopi, believed they were placed here to be caretakers of Mother Earth and to protect the sacred center of the continent. When the Navajo first came into the Southwest, they were hunters and gatherers, moving with the seasons, living in simple shelters in small family groups. The Navajo Nation was a loose association of families and clans. They became shepherds. The Navajo believed that the sheep are gifts from the holy people.
When it's cold and dark with snow, you wrap yourself up. And instead of forgetting the sheep, you stand by them with your teeth chattering. Long ago it was said, if your fingernails are frostbitten and your toenails are falling off from herding sheep, only then do your sheep belong to you.
With the wool from the sheep, the Navajo developed the art of weaving. Their rugs became their primary source of income in the modern world. The Navajo learned how to farm the desert from the Hopi, and corn became an important part of their lives. With farming, the people became rooted. They built permanent shelters called hogans, which opened to the east to greet the sun.
I was born where there were no enclosures, and everyone drew a free breath.
Big Mountain is a shrine to the Navajo who built their homes around its base. The people here are all related by blood, clan, or marriage. For generations, they have passed the land down from mother to daughter. Until now, half the Big Mountain people have been ordered to relocate.
I'm a woman from Big Mountain. In our minds, we love this mountain very much. From the beginning, it was put here for us. I have children. I have a husband. I have the continuing generations of my family. This land must not be stolen from the coming generations.
What my older people say, it's right. And a way for us to have our culture keep on going and not to forget what our ancestors have brought to us.
These ways were put here with us. We shake the pollen from the corn plant and offer it to the sun. The Holy Spirit protects us. We pray for ourselves in this way.
The Navajo elders know the properties of plants and herbs, how to prepare them for different purposes. They know how to use crystals and prayers for healing, how to use planets and stars in planting. This is the heritage they pass down to their children in the sacred circle of life.
The juice from these berries will cure your eyes if they're irritated. These berries are also used to make dyes. The dyes that belong to the white man color the wool right away. But with this, you have to let it sit for a long time before it will do that.
These true elders, they don't need money to live. So, like sometimes they say money, to us money is nothing. Then they don't care for modern things like new materials or nice homes. They don't care for those because they know that those won't last long.
Oh,
This grinding stone was put here for us a long time ago. Washington does not recognize these ways. If he were to look at these things, he would think them of no value. But to us, they are holy. Washington says, go away, go someplace else. Go walk among people in places you don't know. We are not hard enough to survive in places that we are unfamiliar with. If we leave here, we'll grieve for our homeland, and it'll kill us.
It's almost as if they've lost a portion of their soul when they no longer can return to that land. The land that has really defined them to themselves, their connection to their family, to the livestock, to the shrines, to the mountains that are around them. If they lose this, then they are losing the thing that is most precious to them, which we might call our soul.
I really wish that Navajo leaders and Navajo people generally would take a look at this and say, we don't like it. It's rotten, it's unfair, we wish they had done it some other way.
Pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, ya na ne, e ne nui. Pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, pio te wenda, ya na wana ho, ya na ne, e ne nui. Uchitato gimewa uhaniko urane yana neno. Uchitato gimewa uhaniko urane yana neno we. Uchitato gimewa uhaniko urane yana neno. Uchitato gimewa uhaniko urane uhaniko urane uhaniko urane. Uchitato gimewa uhaniko urane.
Yana.
truth be told, you're listening to Jim Pepper, a Kaw and Muskegee Creek Native American saxophonist, singer, and composer known for a musical style that fused various genres of Native American music, including stomp dance, peyote music, and intertribal powwow music with jazz. Jim Pepper. We lost Jim Pepper far, far too young, but his music endures through WBAI. And before that, we were playing you just a vignette, just a piece of Broken Rainbow. Broken Rainbow, the really powerful and unsettling film, a scathing overview of the shameful treatment of North Americans. It is so valuable as a reminder of a tragedy unfolding within our own borders. Passionate and compelling, Broken Rainbow. It's the heartbreaking tale of the forced relocation of 12,000 Navajos from their ancestral homeland in Arizona that began in the 1970s and continues to this day. And we bear witness, the film bears witness, to the machinations of energy companies and their government proxies as they eagerly cast aside the peaceful Navajo to make way for oil and gas and uranium and coal exploration. In their own words, the elders and outside experts all discuss the rich culture and history of the Navajo as well as their close friends and neighbors, the Hopi. Film follows the Native Americans as they take their protest to Congress and so much more. I just want to let you know, I don't want to take too much time to ask, but I will take enough time to beseech you to support this radio station, and most importantly now, yourself and your community, by taking advantage of A Truth Be Told, which is a library, a mega library of films and the words of indigenous peoples that are there to educate, agitate, and organize, to empower we, to truth be told, free ourselves of colonialism and recast this society. By the people, for the people, to realize the promise of democracy, and as a corrective, a reparatory system that understands what it owes our indigenous peoples. The films that we have are so insightful and informative and visually stunning. So I just want to take this moment to say truth be told, and that's what we're calling this package of films. And just to quickly let you know what it is comprised of and the number to call. First, I'll give you the number, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and you will get 10 rare indigenous documentaries, and some of them have several discs, so it's hours and hours of material that is extraordinarily beautiful to watch. The cinematography as such, from the soundtrack to the visuals, are brilliantly done. And these are not commercially available. These are films that have been done by indigenous people, and we want them, they must have a broader audience. And along with these 10 rare indigenous documentaries is the 10-hour audiobook, An Indigenous People's History of the United States by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. And some of the films that you will have as well. So you get the music of Jim Pepper, some of which you heard, one cut of which you heard. You'll get the 10 films, The Doctrine of Discovery, Uncovering the Decolonization Code. You will get Manifest Destiny and the American Holocaust with Professor Ward Churchill. You will get the film Broken Rainbow. You will get 100 years of broken promises by the U.S. government and one fearless woman who made them pay. They came before Columbus as well. The film by Ivan Van Sertima that debunks the myth of discovery of by Columbus. The Trail of Tears. I mean, this is a just a phenomenal set of films. And our story, the indigenous-led fight to protect Greater Chaco, the Diné and Pueblo people who are directly impacted by oil and gas extraction in the Greater Chaco region, who have been organizing for generations. But rarely is the story of extraction and land defense told from their perspectives. The sobering look at a grave history, an indigenous people's history of the United States. Today in the United States, there are more than 500 federally recognized indigenous nations, comprising nearly 3 million people, descendants of the 15 million native people who once inhabited this land, and the centuries-long genocidal program of the U.S. settler colonial regime has largely been admitted from history. We won't let that happen. And these works adroitly challenge the founding myth of the United States, and they show how policy against the indigenous peoples was colonialist and designed to seize the territories of the original inhabitants, displacing or eliminating them. And as these films all reveal, this policy was praised in popular culture, in the highest offices of the government and the military, spanning more than 400 years. These works, these classical films, from the bottom up, they are the people's history, which radically reframe U.S. history and explode the silences that have haunted our national narrative. They are must-see, must-listen-to for everyone interested in, truth be told, the founding of this nation. Truth be told. Ah, so much there. And I just want to let you know that we are going to move from Broken Rainbow to give you another idea, another sampling of the land back efforts, if you will, that continue. And I want you to listen now to our next offering. And that is Power Paths, and Power Paths will change the way you look at energy forever. While you called, now I didn't even tell you what number to call. I didn't tell you that folks are waiting to take your call. They're specially on duty just to do that, to hear from you when you call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. $175 contribution for these rare, remarkable works of art, of culture, of the power and soul of peoples who are fighting for land back. who are fighting and perhaps our best hope for the preservation of this planet. Because the indigenous peoples of the world, of this country, have been at the forefront of that effort to live in a sustainable ecology and to treat the earth as sustainable and to deal with the issues of environmental racism and so on, which are killing the planet. There's so much to learn. So these works emerge from the heart, the soul, and the true history of this country. 212-209-2950. $175. What are you going to ask for? Simple. Truth be told. Because that's what it is. Plain and simple. Truth be told. Truth be told. Please support yourself by getting these works of brilliance. Why are they brilliant? Because truth be told, that's what they are. The truth. And the truth about democracy, how to build it, how to live it, how to live in rapport and consideration of the earth that bred us and maintains us all. Truth be told. And now, while you're calling for truth be told, we look at power paths. Can America truly achieve energy independence? Another offering by our indigenous sisters and brothers, our siblings in total. And this film was awarded the Best Native American Film at the Trail Dance Film Festival. It received the Juror's Award at the International Lake Havasu Film Festival and was the similarly awarded the Best Documentary of the American Film Festival. It's a must have. But now you're going to listen and see why.
Area, there are huge power plants, and those power plants have built huge transmission lines that run across the Navajo Nation.
The coal that's been mined on Black Mesa and the water that's been mined goes to support electricity that none of the Navajo and Hopi people get.
Years, for decades, residents have lived right next to these transmission lines without having access to that electrical power.
It goes right over them, right by them, basically.
We have an estimated 18,000 homes on the Navajo Nation that don't have basic electric services. A lot of residents will see these transmission lines and then wonder, why is it that we're living right next to the transmission lines and we can't get electrical power?
have 6 children. I have 3 girls and 3 boys. It's been really hard for us because we have no electricity and we have to live off these kerosene lights. They don't burn very bright. It looks like it's going to be cold tonight.
I think the electricity comes from the water, the rivers, and the energy turbines that they have at the dams and stuff, hydroelectric dams. Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I have no clue.
I'm not quite sure where my electricity comes from.
My electrical power comes from the sockets in my house.
Since the early 1970s, cheap electricity has flowed to the Los Angeles basin from coal-fired power plants in the deserts of the Southwest. The power superstructure dominates the landscape of many Native Americans who live without electricity or running water. A coalition of Hopis, Navajos, and environmentalists is fighting to change that.
It impacts every Hopi, every Navajo.
How much are they paying you?
We want a public hearing. When are we going to have a public hearing?
I want my voice to be heard.
They may transform the way Americans get their power.
I grew up here as a young kid, spending all my summers taking care of the sheep. At that particular time, they were talking about a project to mine coal. And so there was great concern, and there was a dialogue about coal, you know, what is our belief about coal and mining the coal. If you fly over these mesas, you'll see the hand. It's actually in a cup like this. And inside that cup is water, pure water, lots of it, along with lots of coal. Of course, there's always a knowledge about water, you know, that is sacred. But the coal was the question. In the end, the elders said that it was intended to be developed, but at the right time, they said. In the right way, they said. And finally, for the right purpose.
In the 1960s, both the Hopi and Navajo tribal governments signed coal leases with Peabody Coal. The resulting Black Mesa and Kayenta mines became the largest coal strip mining complex in the world. Navajo tribal members were relocated to make way for the mines, causing decades of strife between previously harmonious neighbors. Coal-fired plants making electricity for the growing cities of the Sun Belt dirtied the clear Southwest air. The land, the air, and the health of the people suffered. But for many Hopi and Diné, also known as the Navajo, the catalyst for action was the water.
When the elders said the right time, the right way, the right purpose, I didn't know what that meant. But I certainly knew the wrong way. It's certainly wrong to be taking pristine water for the purpose of making a gravy we call coal slurry.
Coal slurry is pulverized coal mixed with water. For 35 years, Peabody's Black Mesa mine flushed the slurry through a 273-mile pipeline to Nevada, where it powered the Mojave Generating Station to supply electricity to Las Vegas and Los Angeles.
I was only 10 years old when I really first encountered the slurry, because the slurry pipeline runs right through my rangeland. Sometimes the wind in the area will blow hard enough that it'll expose that pipe. And I would ask my grandfather, "What is this?" And he'd say, "Put your ear to it." And sure enough, there it was,
In the Navajo way, in the Diné way, water is our mother and our father. There's the early morning water, which is our mother, and there's the midnight water, which is our father. In the Navajo way, the thundering clouds that brings water is the male rain, and the light, gentle rains is the female rain. Bajanastit means that you have to respect it. And Bajanastit means that it's powerful. And so it has the power to take life and to give life. And if you don't respect it, you might find yourself in a serious situation.
For centuries, the Hopi and Navajo have depended on an underground aquifer, a basin of sandstone holding pure water from the last ice age. Through cracks in the sandstone, desert springs flow to the surface. From 1971 until 2005, Peabody Coal pumped over 1 billion gallons of pure water a year to slurry coal. The springs, the source of drinking water and irrigation for Hopi farms and Navajo ranches, are now in trouble.
When I was young, I used to come here, and this used to be a small embankment right here. And there used to be a clear water in here, about that deep. Because I remember when I was coming up here, I would drink from it. But that's where the water was just trickling from. It used to trickle on down. You could go all the way to Black Mesa. This whole valley was dotted with springs. This is the one I really missed the most. It's completely dry. No more water.
Hopis and Navajos organized to pressure their tribal governments not to renew Peabody Coal's leases and stop the draining of the Navajo aquifer. Then Peabody sought to use new water for the coal slurry, the Coconino Aquifer, the source for Flagstaff and much of northern Arizona.
The mining company came to our lands. They asked for our coal and our water, and they have been making themselves a good living with our coal and our water. And since that day also, they made work for us too. And that work has been hauling water for ourselves.
Peabody Coal Company is taking pristine groundwater and using it to transport coal. And for our people, water is life.
Water is more important than making money. The water is what takes care of us. It's who we are. It's in us. It's what Creator gave us to live. All these elements that are important for life, water is one of them. Money is not one of those elements.
What we're trying to say is that we need change. We need transition.
For many years, our central governments just moved it along as a rubber stamp process, you know. I mean, as long as the tribes were getting their royalties, they were okay with it. And it was probably the first time that, aside from other political issues that Navajo and Hopi as neighbors had to overcome, the people came together around water. And we both went after Peabody Coal Company.
For decades, individual Navajos and Hopis battled the slurry and their own tribal governments. Electricity for growing cities of the Southwest was cheap, but costs to the tribe were disastrous. Despite cancer epidemics from mining pollution, the destruction of cultural sites, and undervalued leases for coal and water, both the Navajo and Hopi tribes continued to rely on $5 to $20 million in annual energy royalties.
Once upon a time, the Navajo Nation was very independent, very fierce, and very proud. They took that away from us. And I, for one, as an individual person in my own right, as the leader of my nation, I'd like to get us back, you know, our independence and our pride. We need jobs. We need to use our resources to help ourselves, whatever resource that is, whether it's coal, natural gas, our land, our water.
When I was 18, I went down to work on the Navajo Reservation, and there was actually 44 operating uranium mines, 10 uranium mills, 5 coal-fired power plants, and 4 coal strip mines. On or adjacent to the Navajo Reservation. They had dewatered a lot of those areas, those mines, and they had contaminated a lot of those aquifers with radiation. It's an area where there's not a lot of water, and a lot of that water even ended up over at the Mojave Generating Station. That's the impact of the past round of bad energy policy in Indian Country in a snapshot.
By late 2003, the Navajo and Hopi governments passed resolutions demanding an end to the pumping. The Mojave Generating Station and its majority owner, Southern California Edison, was also under pressure from lawsuits for violations of the Federal Clean Air Act.
It was obviously the dirtiest coal-fired power plant in the West. It was spewing out 58,000 tons of sulfur dioxide annually. And the main concern was over the issues of air pollution over the Grand Canyon. We got into a court-approved settlement with the owners to either put pollution controls on the plant, scrubbers, or shut the plant down within 5 years. The owners basically made no attempts to put scrubbers on, so they shut down.
On December 31st, 2005, after 35 years, the Mojave Generating Station closed down. The coal slurry line and the Black Mesa mine now sit idle.
It was a bittersweet victory, for we had relatives and relations working at the mine.
230 Navajo and Hopi miners lost their jobs, and the royalties for Black Mesa coal and water stopped.
I had to go back to work, so I had to go away from home, practically maybe 16, 20 hours away from home and not see my family for 4 or 5 months at a time.
I think the hardest thing was to find out that my husband was getting laid off at the same time as me. And we have a mortgage.
I'm concerned about is, you know, where am I going to pick up the money to pay my bills, you know? And Peabody was one of the entities that were here to supply that part for me.
I mean, it's better to organize some workshops.
Concerned about the economic effects of the mine and plant closures, a grassroots coalition devised a plan to bring energy jobs back to the reservation and feed more power into the electric grid.
We had to start thinking about the impacts of the closure of the mine and the loss of jobs. We didn't want to be just there just to shut something down and go back to our lives. We wanted to be part of that solution.
You know, 4,000 acre foot of water
to slurry coal to Nevada is not a smart thing to be doing in the desert. So from that perspective, there was a lot of elation. You know, finally, we get to preserve our water, and you know, we can conserve it for future generations. From the economic perspective, I was in shock.
And the whole team?
So we came up with the Just Transition Plan, a collaboration of organizations. Black Mesa Water Coalition, Grand Cane Trust, Sierra Club, the Indigenous Environmental Network, as well as just communities on Black Mesa, Navajo chapters, officials, and Hopi village officials, and just, you know, regular moms and dads.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
A lot of misconceptions going about. So Just Transition was a way of saying, now that the coal mine is shut down, take this opportunity to transition off of dirty energy sources and onto something that's more sustainable, long-term, better for our communities locally and better for our communities globally.
For 35 years, they benefited. I think it's time now for California to understand that the goodness that we have shared with our neighbors must reciprocate. And the idea of Just Transition is just that. I think that they need to come back and say, hey, now what can we do for you?
What we're doing actually is a little different than history. Yo, hey, yo, hey, yeah, yeah.
Yo,
that's Jim Pepper, Custer's Last Stand. And you are listening to Truth Be Told, a real rethinking of Thanksgiving. And right now, from land acknowledgments, if you will, to land back. This is an expanded equal rights and justice, and we are pleased, honored to be with you. And as Jim Pepper, the saxophonist, whose music we will make available to you, the great, late Jim Pepper, took us into my asking you to continue to rethink Thanksgiving and to do so from land back acknowledgments to land back. Indigenous solidarity. And we were listening to, before Jim Pepper, a piece about land back acknowledgments, a path forward, one of the films out of nine others, many of them with multiple discs, that really look at a recasting of the narrative of the both oppression and colonialization and genocide that indigenous people have experienced at the hands of settler colonizers, to their endurance, their struggles, their efforts to teach and be heard, to preserve the land. Indigenous solidarity is an essential part of the struggle for racial and environmental justice. That is what we are taught. That is what we must learn. It is critical that we deepen our commitment to indigenous sovereignty in ourselves and in our movements, take collective action towards land rematriation, and support efforts to ensure a just and sustainable existence for all of our future generations. That is what we are learning and thinking through and interrogating this morning through the voices of our indigenous siblings. This is an invitation to interrogate so-called Thanksgiving and move beyond the myths of America's history with indigenous peoples of Turtle Island, from the tar sands pipelines across Turtle Island to Arctic oil and gas drilling. Indigenous campaigns of resistance continue to lead the way in protecting future generations against the destruction of sacred lands and waterways, moving into a deeper understanding of how colonialism is embedded in our frameworks and systems, builds our capacity to be better allies to indigenous people. We've been hearing from the front lines of indigenous efforts to resist violence and colonization, fueled by the current extractive economic system, and gather ways to future and further and deepen solidarity with indigenous resistance centering on land rematuration. So we would like to give you the tools. Don't just want you to listen to this one time, but to have the complete films, the clips from which we've been playing, to have the music complete, to have the 10-hour audiobook, The Indigenous People's History of the United States, which spans more than 400 years. A classic bottom-up people's history, which radically reframes U.S. history and explodes the silence that have haunted our national narrative. It is a must listen to for anyone interested in the truth behind this nation's founding. All of that is available, the 10-hour audiobook, the complete album of Jim Pepper's music, the 10 full feature-length films. Because it is so important that we think clearly and honestly, and that we understand how the beautified pilgrims really saw the natives, the real founding of this country. Yet our national narrative surrounding this holiday celebrates the first Thanksgiving as a moment of harmonious bridge building. This is clearly not the case, especially when we learn about the Pequot Massacre of 1637. This is just one of a multitude of genocidal tactics employed against the indigenous peoples of this land since white Europeans arrived in 1492. Of this event, Governor Bradford said, and I just want you to listen to a piece of this, those that escaped the fire were slain with the sword, some hewed to pieces, others run through with rapiers, so that they were quickly dispatched and very few escaped. It was conceived that they thus destroyed about 400 at this time. It was a fearful sight to see them thus frying in the fire. Horrible was the stink and scent thereof, but the victory seemed a sweet sacrifice, and they gave the prayers therefore to God who had wrought so wonderfully for them. The occupiers celebrated the genocide and thank God for the victory. Immediately following the Pequot Massacre of 1637, the occupiers worked diligently to whitewash history. The name of the tribe was erased from the map. The Pequot River became the Thames, and the geographic space the Pequot inhabited became known as New London. It is as if they never existed. The whitewashing and erasure of indigenous history is not unique to this holiday, but it is perhaps one of the most ironic incidences of indigenous mass murder in service of white European colonial expansion. The idea that we celebrate, the notion that indigenous peoples and the white European occupiers who literally sought their extinction were able to put their differences to the side long enough to sit down and feast upon food in relative peace and harmony is deeply troubling. Even more so is the idea that it was the white European occupiers who had to teach and demonstrate civility to the barbarous people. With the Pequot Massacre in mind, it is clear which group in the Thanksgiving picture were the real barbarous people and who were the ones practicing civility. The language and the rhetoric surrounding the holiday erase the true history of settler colonialism. And that is our messaging today. And we do so with 10 films, full-length, documentary, rare films, all produced by and about our indigenous siblings. Their wisdom, their endurance, their knowledge, and if we listen, their perspective on a society that is truly democratic, that really is of the pie, of the people, by the people, for the people. So we ask you to call 212-209-2950 and really take advantage of this meaningful, profound offer that drills down into the reality of settler colonialism and comes forth with a brave, beautiful new vision of a society that is based on sustainability, that poses an alternative to vulgar materialism, And does what King, Martin Luther King, so beautifully expressed, which is to really tear down the three pillars that uphold capitalism. What are they? There were racism and all forms of bias. They are militarism and all forms of warfare. They are the third pillar. The economic inequality and exploitation of the working class, those who create the wealth. And when you tear those down, and I would add a fourth pillar today, which is certainly the degradation of the planet and climate justice. And who better to instruct on this than our indigenous siblings? And that's what we learned from these films. So we recast the narrative. We understand a history rooted in settler colonialism, and then we can move forward to really deal with the contemporary and meaningful problems that confront our society and the major leaders of whom who educate us towards planet preservation, towards egalitarianism, to the repudiation of vulgar materialism, and to certainly tear down those pillars that uphold a foul, exploitative, destructive, and corrupting system. So go to your phone now. Go to your phone now. Call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. $175 contribution will get you the 10 films. I can barely hold them all in my mind. There's Fighting Indians, the powerful and moving film which captures the contentious landscape that communities navigate when retiring harmful native themed school mascots while elevating tribal sovereignty and championing native voices. There is the pathos of Broken Rainbow. There is the film on one of the not just indigenous leaders, but the leaders of all people who strive for equal rights and justice. And that is Leonard Peltier, 47 years behind the walls. The film on the American Indian Movement, narrated and told by Stennis Banks. There are the Indigenous People's History of the U.S. There is the Path Ahead, Power Paths, as I am being reminded by my intrepid companion this morning, who's making all of this possible, the wonderful Catherine Davis, who is engineering for you this morning so that we can tell or be the vessels that hold the truths that are being told by our indigenous siblings. The real story of Thanksgiving. And the real ideas for the preservation of this planet. You can get all these films. It is amazing. Truth Be Told. That's what we're calling it. So it's the Truth Be Told package. Oh, gosh. Fighting Indians. More Than an Indian. The Indigenous People's History of the United States. Broken Rainbow. Oh, I'm reaching over to see so much more. Real Injun, spelled I-N-J-U-N, on the trail of the Hollywood Indian and debunking all the mythologies that go and have been propagated by Hollywood on the indigenous people. Good gracious, there's so many more. There's so many more. Oh, do trust me on this. This is a rare, meaningful set of tools to be the emissaries, to take out these tools, to be the emissaries for WBAI. To do what? To educate, agitate, and organize. To do what? Educate, agitate, and organize to empower the people. For another world is possible if we have the tools and work to make it so. And I maintain that these films are just those kind of tools that you can take into the schools. You can give to your local libraries, who I am sure do not have these. You can hold your own film nights in your own apartment and bring together folks. What about during a lunch break in your workplace? I mean, think about all the ways that you can use these instructive, engrossing tools, movies, films, audio books from indigenous voices heard. If you make it so, use them. Learn, increase your own informational base, your own theoretical and political base, which should inform your activism and make us far better allies to indigenous people that in so many respects are the leaders for environmental justice? Are the leaders for a sustainable way of living, creating a balance and a harmony that is imperative for the very preservation of the planet? And also for a sense of humanity and a way of living that's embedded in equal rights and justice and distribution. Ah, so much to learn. Truth be told, that's what we're calling it. 212-209-2950. $175 for absolutely priceless information and absolutely amazing, brilliantly made, creative products, films that are just striking in the imagery, the way they meld the message with the actual imagery of film and the soundtrack. They are they not, Kathy? I mean, Kathy's actually watching, which I don't have the luxury of right now, many of these films as we play the clips for you to hear. And are they not just, your thoughts, Kathy? Catherine?
It's amazing to me, and I'm learning so much more about the foundation of what's wrong with the world, starting with the conquering of the indigenous Aboriginal people here, and that same process has been taken to country after country after country, and we need to turn it around. And yes, we should be led by the original people here in this country.
And as Catherine was saying, of course, we heard the doctrine of discovery that not only provide the ideological sway for efforts to conquer people with robust civilizations for thousands of years, but that also provided a base for our system of laws that are in effect today to rationalize the destruction of the extractive industries, but the theft and the thievery of land, not as personal things to hold on to by any one people, but as sustainable bases that people lived off of and respected. And from the film The Doctrine of Discovery, which was decades in the making, we learn about the ideology and the rationalization that was set in place and the body of laws to oppress people and engage in genocidal activity and land theft. Truth be told, that's what we're asking you to support. WBAI by and yourself by getting Truth Be Told, the 10 films, the 10-hour audiobook, The Indigenous People's History of the United States by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. These things well may be the most important U.S. historic works that you will see and hear in your lifetime. You know, today in the United States, right, there are more than 500 federally recognized indigenous nations, which I said earlier. And the centuries-long genocidal program of the U.S. settler colonial regime has largely been omitted from history, but not with these works. So if you're a justice seeker, and justice seekers everywhere should celebrate these works and the artistry and intellect, the unflinching commitments to truth of our indigenous siblings, a truth that places settler colonialism and genocide exactly where they belong, as foundational to the existence of the United States. These are meticulously documented, thought-provoking treatises to generate discussion. 212-209-2950. Please support WBAI, support life, support sustainability by hearing these truths, by viewing these works of art, of culture, of politics, culture being a total way in which people live, which we can learn so much from. Truth Be Told, call now, 212-209-2950. As a matter of fact, get a bunch of them and give them out as, we're getting to that season again, the materialist season, but we're getting to whether it's Feast of Three Kings, whether it's Hanukkah, whether it's Kwanzaa, whether it's Christmas, etc. But you don't need those as an excuse. Give these as gifts, particularly to young people who are not getting this in the university structure if they are going there or otherwise. That's the gift that WBAI is really giving, Truth Be Told. These films, they are a remedy for the whitewashing of history, for revising history, and developing rhetoric that celebrates the creativity, the creation of a new kind of civic identity through the eyes of indigenous people, so that we can stop contributing to the oppression. The stories like those told about the Indians and pilgrims at Thanksgiving ingrain a false sense of truth into the mind of the general public. And these stories tell the populace that everything is okay. And in fact, the Indians owe a lot to the pilgrims. A closer examination and orientation about actual history, however, will negate these ideas and will enable the Thanksgiving boomer sooner. Are told the way they are. These stories are extensions of colonialism and, in fact, genocidal tactics. By erasing and replacing the true stories with those of Thanksgiving, the occupier continues to remain complicit in genocide, and we divest ourselves of that. And you can do so best right now by getting these works from the people's hearts and souls and history. Truth Be Told. 212-209-2950. And we are going to go back and hear from someone who makes a contribution to us by talking more about land back. And this was one of the people that I contacted and asked if she could send us a recorded message this morning. I want us to hear that by way of rethinking Thanksgiving.
So next, I'd like to introduce Betty Lyons, our next speaker. And Betty is the president and executive director of the American Indian Law Alliance, which is an Indigenous environmental organization. Betty is an Indigenous environmental activist and citizen of the Onondaga Nation. Betty has worked for the nation for over 20 years and serves as a member of the Haudenosaunee External Relations Committee and has been an active participant at the annual United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues since its very first session in 2001. And she has been a delegate there of the Onondaga Nation. Betty continues to work for the protection of Indigenous peoples who are fighting to protect their traditions, territories, resources, and care for Mother Earth. Out of her concern for Indigenous peoples and Mother Earth, Betty also serves on numerous boards. For example, for the Future Foundation, the MOST, the SCANO, Great Law of Peace Center, and she is also the co-chair for the Center of Earth Ethics Advisory Board. So please welcome Betty. Thank you.
Niwa Haskano. I'm really thankful to be here. I'm wearing a purple beaded collar and I have dark hair and glasses. And just grateful to be with all of you today. As Jake spoke about earlier, you know, what he was talking about during the words that come before all else, which is a words of gratitude. He was one of my mentors. And still is, and what he was saying was demonstrating the interconnectedness for us as Indigenous peoples to all other living beings. We don't see ourselves as separate from our relatives, all other living beings. And we're certainly on the same level. We're not above them. We don't dominate them. We work in proper relationship with them. And it's about being grateful every day, not this, thought of gratitude once a year. And I love what Demetrius said about it being a whack-ass holiday, because it isn't about just being grateful once a year. It's that gratitude and mindfulness that we are just a part of what has been given us to continue and to survive. As we know, the doctrine of discovery is the root cause. It was a papal bull of 1452 by Pope Nicholas. And it's what started the dispossession of our lands, the domination of Mother Earth. It started the transatlantic slave trade, creating, a hierarchical system and the domination of the natural world, the domination of women, the domination of Indigenous peoples, and the domination of people of all color. This was the legal justification for genocide, and it is the notion still held and exercised in law that we're less than human and therefore have no rights to land and resources. The doctrine was and is primarily used to support decisions in validating or ignoring Aboriginal possession of land in favor of modern governments. It's the basis for all Indian land law, and the U.S., Canada, Indigenous peoples from around the world are feeling those effects. Central and South America, Africa, New Zealand, Australia, as well as many others. And there are more than 500 million Indigenous peoples around the world today that still live with the effects of the doctrine's oppressive racism. White European Christians enjoy a moral and legal right based solely on their religious identity to invade and seize Indigenous lands and to dominate Indigenous peoples. Extractive industry, together with multinational corporations backed by U.S., Canada, and Mexico, come into Indigenous territories using military force to displace peoples off their land, desecrate their sacred sites, kill, rape, and terrorize for minerals and fossil fuels, all in the quest for money. And the result is naturally the acceleration of climate change. you know, desecration of our sacred sites, the murder of water and land protectors, the sexual exploitation and trafficking of our women and girls, resulting in Indigenous peoples fleeing their homelands, and the quote unquote beginning of migration. You know, I really, there are so many words that I can't stand. And, you know, what I want to make clear to everyone is that not only do the oppressed suffer, but also the oppressors. They suffer just as much. They're going to continue to suffer. What we are working for is more than the ownership of land. It is about our inherent right to the connection and relationship with her. So if we as Indigenous peoples lose this connection to the land, we lose who we are. And if we lose this diversity of ways of knowing and ways of being, then everyone will suffer. And you see it happening now. It's happening all over. We've already passed that tipping point. The knowledge we have is critical, especially right now, to deal with what we will all face in the future. Everything that we do is intertwined with our mother, our language, our songs, our ceremonies, food ways, and it is our mandate as Indigenous peoples to protect and speak for all living beings. We must continue to fight the acts of educational erasure we have all endured and suffered. We must continue to fight against white supremacy, as they are the direct result of that doctrine of discovery I was talking about. As our uncle always says, we need a value change for our survival. And remember, we are all relatives. He also talks about how we can exchange blood, and it doesn't get any closer than that. Recently, after many years of hard work, the Onondaga Nation is going to recover 1,023 acres of forest lands in the Tully Valley through an historic agreement with New York State and the federal government, proving that our nation-to-nation work that we've done since they set up house here is working. The nation now can help restore those lands and waters to preserve them for the future generations yet to come. We still are working to get a piece of our unceded sacred Onondaga Lake back. This work has been decades. We've been promised by multiple different executive directors from, or county executives from Onondaga County. And, you know, it's sickening. I actually had one walk the property with us, putting his arm around me, and he actually shed a tear, and I bought it and I believed him. And yet we still haven't gotten those lands back. You know, that Onondaga Lake is where our peacemaker came over 1,000 years ago, bringing our original 5 warring nations together under the great law of peace. And many of you probably don't know this, but it's the birthplace of Western democracy, and it should matter to everyone. And the U.S. patterned their government after the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. And of course, they left out, you know, the rights of women, the rights of Mother Earth. This sacred lake that I'm talking about is still one of the most polluted lakes in the world after $450 million of remediation. You know, we've had promise after promise, and we're going to still keep fighting. But unfortunately, they want to put a beach on our sacred lake that is still laden with mercury on the bottom of the lake. And you can't swim off the shore. You actually have to go out in the middle of the water to be able to jump in. I mean, it's absurd. You know, we're also working to get land back in New York City for the over 150,000 Indigenous peoples that call it their home. You know, we as humans, I think, do it the worst. We're the worst relatives to all other living beings. You know, as my partner always says, you know, we're the only animals on earth that contaminate our water and then still think we can drink from it. And I'm sure some of you are wondering why we don't seek recourse and justice. And there are many different laws, state, federal, and international laws and treaties. There's the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, the UN Declaration on the Rights of the Child. We also have the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, but that one is not a law and therefore not enforceable. So here's my question. If we're equal to all other human beings, then why would we need the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples? Our rights and the rights of Mother Earth should be protected under already existing treaties, laws, and international law. I find it just absolutely outrageous. And we're all going to suffer what's to come. It's not going to miss anyone. It doesn't matter how much money you have, where you think you're going to go. You're going to take a spaceship to what, Mars, to the moon? I mean, come on, you know? Mother Earth needs a lifeline, not another pipeline. We did get some encouraging information from the New York State Department of Education, and they put out a statement saying that if all New York State schools didn't end their usage of indigenous mascots and indigenous names, they would be defunded by the end of the academic year. And so it goes to show that this work does mean something, that if we all come together in allyship, we can make a difference, and we will make a difference. So I want to thank you.
Thank you so much, Betty.
Well, that is some more of the music of Jim Pepper. Jim Pepper, who passed in 1992, 51 years of age, a Caughan Muskogee Creek Native American singer, composer, saxophonist. You've been hearing his music this morning, and I just want to let you know that you can get more of the music of Jim Pepper along with the 10 films, all done by indigenous people, all with powerful messaging. You know, whether one participates in settler colonialism is not merely a matter of or when or how one's ancestors came to the U.S. Having settler privilege means that some combination of one's economic security, U.S. citizenship, sense of relationship to the land, mental and physical health, cultural integrity, family values, career aspirations, and spiritual lives are not possible, literally not possible, without the territorial dispossession of indigenous peoples. How then can settler allies move beyond being sympathetic beneficiaries of colonialism? What approach is legitimately decolonizing? And as indigenous historian and activist Roseanne Dunbar Ortiz, the author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States, one of the people who have contributed to help BAI by making these works available, these works that you can use to continue to educate, agitate, and organize around casting off the decolonization, really, of our minds, and for a decolonizing vision by listening to indigenous peoples speaking. just want to remind you that you can call 212-209-2950 and ask for Truth Be Told. Truth Be Told, 10 films, 10-hour audio book, the music of Jim Pepper. Let's pull it up a little bit, Catherine, as you're hearing. Which is what Jim Pepper does. He has his various kind of genres of Native American music, including stomp dances and peyote music and intertribal powwow music, all fused with jazz. Jim Pepper. Well, you can have this. You can have it all. And we are going to move on now with our... What are we? Well, I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and I'm honored to be here with you for our a three-hour special from Equal Rights and Justice over the amazing. I mean, I am always amazed when I listen to WBAI. It is a platform that for 60 years is just, yeah, it is about educating, agitating, and organizing to empower we the people, to bring you the voices of the peoples that are so often suppressed. What an honor to be a vessel to really hold some of these voices and to be able to use this platform to give to us, to give to us for a far better world as possible if we choose to make it so and use the tools of this phenomenal radio station with all of its warts. But why shouldn't it have warts? It's rough. I mean, it keeps us honest in a lot of ways. It is about struggle. Nobody comes in with million-dollar grants here. It's about you sustaining it. We've always had to sustain our own movements, and that's what makes them so much more righteous and so more capable, so much more capable of bringing about really righteous change, because we're involved, and we're involved in each level. And as I continue to say, and I'm aware of it more and more all the time, democracy is not a passive sport. It's not a passive endeavor of any kind. And for any one of the issues we believe in, we need a media that is going to be the megaphone for those various causes. And I maintain that WBAI is. So keep us keeping on. And we're going to go now from the wonderful music of Jim Pepper to, we had heard moments ago from Betty Lyons. And she was talking about a number of the land back struggles. And we want to bring you a name that should be known, and it's Eloise Cobell. She is a courageous, she was a courageous fighter for justice for hundreds of thousands of Native Americans who were cheated out of billions of dollars by the United States government. So I want you to know, because see, these are the things you're not going to know unless you listen to BAI. We want to hear about 100 years, one woman's fight for justice. Eloise Cobell, you should know that, you should know that, you should know that, and you will if you ask for Truth Be Told, the complete package of material, when you call 212-209-2950. But let's hear and learn about, as we talk about land back, Eloise Cobell and her 100-year struggle of about 100 years of oppression and being cheated by, hey, the United States government.
The government always wanted control over us, that they could lease your land out to oil companies and timber companies and make sweetheart deals, and nobody held them accountable.
We had 330 acres, and they all got wells on them. Now, I'm going to show you oil and gas payment report. This one here, $89, over $6,000 worth of oil and gas, oil taken out of there, and I get $89.
They basically told the Indian people that you're all really stupid and you can't manage your trust, so we will manage your trust for you.
Navajo Reservation, for example, they are living on one of the largest gas reserves, not only in this country, but the world. Yet they are among the poorest people in this country. Abject poverty. How can that be? Who is getting rich? It's not them.
I was the treasurer for the Blackfeet Indian tribe for 13 years. Early on is when I started recognizing these serious problems with the trust accounts. I've tried for years and I couldn't get any answers. Just continued to beat on all the doors. And I remember the government called all the treasurers and finance officers from every tribe that had accounts and brought us all to Albuquerque. They were telling us that this is the way that we're going to be accounting for the tribal trust account. And I said, yes, I have a question. I have problems with this trust account that I don't understand. And the fellow just looked at me and said, well, you don't know how to read a report. After the meeting was over, there were several of the tribal people came over and said, Eloise, we're having the same problem. And then we banded it together. And it was through that process that we were able to get hearings in the Congress. We need your support to stand up for the many individual Indian beneficiaries, like Mary Johnson, a Navajo grandmother who relies almost exclusively on a few dollars and her allotment to receive support for her family. She receives pennies of what a non-Indian is paid for gas from her land.
The Department of Interior is responsible for managing 56 million acres of individual Indian land and tribal land.
They want to be able to dictate what happens to Indian lands, when to sell oil and to whom. So oil companies report themselves how much they have extracted from Indian lands. They then pay based on how much they say they extracted. That's an extraordinary situation for a trustee not to figure out on its own how much has been taken from the land.
Then I found out from my cousin, who worked down the oil fields and stuff for the tribe, he said, Mad Dog, you know what's happening? I said, no. He said, they're coming in at nighttime, emptying that tank, and just drive out, nobody there to catch them.
My parents lived quite a ways out in the country, a rural area, so all of our neighbors and relatives would come to visit, and stories would always come out about, I can't get my money from the Indian agent, and I would...
All the money from the oil company went to the superintendent, which he kept a ledger sheet that showed how much money you had, but every time you wanted to spend some money, you had to go and ask him if you could spend this.
It was just awful, and that was his own money. Like he said, my grandmother begging for her own money so she could set a good Christmas table for the kids.
When the Clinton administration got in, I was ecstatic. They're going to listen to me. They're going to really do something about it. Finally, one day, I got a call back from the Department of Justice and said, we have your meeting for you. And there was an entire room full of attorneys. The attorney that was conducting the meeting told me, now, Eloise, don't you come in here with any false expectations. I said, people are dying in Indian communities every single day, and you tell me don't come in here with any false expectations. Then and there, I thought, it is time to draw a line in the sand. Enough is enough. Finally, on June 10th, 1996, I filed the largest class action lawsuit in the history of the United States.
There were a number of boxes of documents relating to Indian accounts that had been destroyed and that the court was not told had been destroyed. It was just a gigantic fiasco.
The judge sent a serious message to the defendants that they had to comply with his court orders. And when they continued to destroy documents, continued to not produce documents, we had a contempt trial.
How long is it going to take for Congress to act? And we see things like Enron, WorldCom, and Telcom. Congress immediately took action, passed the Corporate Responsibility Act.
Let's hear it for Eloise Cabell.
I'd like to thank everybody here that has been waiting for so long for justice for the Indian Trust Funds, a lawsuit that we've been working on for over 10 years. All we're asking for is accountability for the United States government to come forward and give the Indian people an accounting of their money.
We need to have the American people understand how this is affecting all of us, how it affects people on this reservation. When you have a lease in which you are getting 5 cents for every dollar a non-Indian gets, when you get a check with no explanation whatsoever.
Congress kept saying, give us a figure of what you will settle for. So we proposed a figure of $27.5 billion, a much discounted figure. Was it an amount that every penny that is owed us? No, it wasn't. But at least we had a figure out there that what we would settle for.
Where could you go and find that a judge would be removed because he based his decisions on fact and Native people were winning? It was very disappointing that the appellate court would remove our judge, but they did.
And I think that people will look back upon that as one of the darkest days for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeal.
So... $8 billion? Well, maybe we could settle for $8 billion. But the day before, in the late hours before Senator McCain was going to do the markup on the bill was pulled by the White House, or by the administration. And the administration said that they needed more time. 10 years of litigation, 10-plus years of litigation. They had, the bill was introduced over a year ago, but they needed more time. And so basically we all knew what the tactic was of the administration is to stall again until a new administration comes in and it's not on George Bush's watch. They know they owe it. They know they have the liability, but they're stalling. They continue to stall.
Senator Obama will carry the state right now. Take a look at the actual vote. 51% for Obama, 49% for McCain. He's up by 61,820. That's what...
And I want to start by acknowledging a few people who have worked so hard to allow us to be here today on this wonderful occasion. It began when Eloise Cobell was here today, charged the Interior Department with failing to account for tens of billions of dollars that they were supposed to collect on behalf of more than 300,000 of her fellow Native Americans. Eloise's argument was simple. The government, as a trustee of Indian funds, should be able to account for how it handles that money. And now, after 14 years of litigation, it's finally time to address the way that Native Americans were treated by their government. This bill will provide a small measure of justice to Native Americans whose funds were held in trust by a government charged with looking out for them. And that's why I am so extraordinarily proud to sign this bill today. Thank you very much.
Eloise Cobell the way we talk about Rosa Parks 50 years from now. I mean, she's a great American who stood up for the rights for her people, and in doing that, that expands the rights for all Americans.
Today was a very special day. Let's give the legal teams a nice round of applause. And thank you. Thank you all.
You can make a big circle.
We'll do a round dance and hold hands.
Sacrilege to do this, but is the music of Jim Pepper, and you're just going to have to take advantage of the fact that you can get the music of Jim Pepper, the Call Muskogee Creek Native American saxophonist, singer, and composer, really, really known for his incredibly interesting musical style that fused the various genres of Native American music with jazz. And he passed away at 51 years. And a terrible loss. Tragic story. But we can hold him near and dear through your opportunity to call 212-201-209. Gee, that number's running through my head. How could I possibly have 212-209-2950? This is the last moment that I'm going to take to ask you to go to your phone and get the marvelous, compelling portrait, for example, of the indefatigable heroine fighting for the disenfranchised, who we just played a clip from, the film 100 Years, Eloise Korbel. Over 100 years ago, the United States government broke up numerous Indian reservations and allotted millions, millions of acres to 300,000 individual Indians. And they promised to manage their land and send lease payments for the oil, the gas, the timber, and the grazing to the Indian Trust Fund. But what did they do? What did they do? Instead, the Department of the Interior grossly mismanaged the money owed them. And as the treasurer of the Blackfeet tribe, Eloise Korbel noticed issues with the trust account and raised questions about the missing money, which led her to a 30-year fight that resulted in the largest class action suit ever filed against the federal government. And after filing in 1996, Eloise Korbel's indomitable spirit persisted for 15 years and three presidential administrations until she finally prevailed and made history with a $3.4 billion settlement. Well, the film not only details her long fight, but it serves as a fitting tribute to a warrior unlike any other. If you think we're having a hard time, imagine one woman fighting for Native American rights against the entire U.S. government. So you need to see 100 years to find out how she won. You need to have, for your library, 100 years as an excellent resource for a course in ethics and history and political science. It is such a compelling portrait. 100 years exposes how Eloise Corbella Blackfoot, Blackfeet, Indian, and treasurer of her tribe noticed the numbers didn't add up and in 1966 filed the class action lawsuit. And she held the United States government accountable for a century of injustice. It is an eye-opening film, this crusader for justice. And what emerges in 100 years is the indomitable spirit and passion, her conviction in pursuing a case that seemed impossible to win. It captures the indelible images of the harsh conditions on Indian reservations. 100 years is especially valuable for its portrait of Eloise Cobell, someone who succeeded in countering centuries of oppression. She is an inspiration for everyone. Well, you've been listening to Equal Rights and Justice, and I can't bring you nearly all, not nearly, for sure, all of the materials that I've had available that I've put together that is part of my archives to observe the National Day of Mourning, the same day as Thanksgiving. We don't celebrate the arrival of the pilgrims and other European settlers, but rather commemorate with our indigenous siblings the National Day of Mourning, which educates that Thanksgiving is a brutal reminder that the U.S. is a settler colonial nation. The U.S. is a nation founded upon the genocide of millions of Native people, the theft of Native lands, and the relentless assault on Native culture. Well, recognizing this gives us an opportunity now to educate, agitate, and re-educate and recast the narrative through all the films, the audiobook, the music that we have available in order to dispel the myth of American exceptionalism and raise awareness about historical and ongoing injustices facing Native Americans and the opportunity to build solidarity with indigenous-led struggles across the country and indeed around the world for equal rights and justice. So we're going to go out with a land back piece. But I want to tell you that for $175, just call 212-209-2950. Say, truth be told, truth be told. You will get the trail of the Hollywood Indian real engine. You will get more than a mascot. You will get the fighting Indians. You will get the story, 100 years of Eloise Cobell. You will get the indigenous people's history of the United States. You will get the story of Leonard Peltier. Free, free Leonard Peltier. That is our messaging this morning and all that he represents. 47 years behind the walls. Free, free Leonard Peltier. You will get the film on Leonard Peltier. You will get the film narrated by Dennis Banks on the history of the American Indian Movement and so much more. What will you get? You will get an education to decolonize our mind. Truth be told, truth be told, it will help us move to equal rights and justice. On I'm Mimi Rosenberg. It has been an honor and a pleasure, and we go out with another piece that was contributed just specially for this morning on rethinking Thanksgiving on Land Back, part of the struggle. So don't forget, you can call, you can get all those films, all the music, all the material, so much more. I haven't even remembered all the pieces we have. It's worth it. It's worth it. WBAI is worthy of your support. So let's hear from our dear sister now on a final piece on Land Back.
Amish Pancinco, Noanyolke, No Toka, Oselo Sochi, Iwan Ii, Ika Nawat, Ika English. My name is Eve Reyes Aguirre. It's good to be here. I'm very honored to be a part of this process and moderate for all of you. Today I am wearing a black shirt with red flowers and red glasses. And now I have the honor of introducing Karina Gold. Karina is the tribal spokesman for the Confederated Village of Lisan. Born and raised in her ancestral homeland, the territory of the Huchili, she is the mother of three and grandmother of four. Karina has worked on preserving and protecting the sacred burial sites of her ancestors throughout the Bay Area for decades. I introduce Karina now. Thank you.
Good day, relatives. My name is Karina Gould. I'm the tribal chair for the Confederated Villages of Lashon Nation. I'm coming to you today from my home territory of Huchun. I am a short brown woman with her hair back in a braid, wearing a turquoise top. Behind me is the mountain that we call Tuyushtak. And Tuyushtak is the name of the mountain of which we were created. In this territory, born to the waterway of the Lashon. When this creation mountain was the creation place of five different tribes that the Confederation is made up of. And it was this creation place for thousands and thousands of years prior to colonization. Once colonizers got here, they renamed this mountain Mount Diablo, or Devil Mountain. So for thousands of years, it was a place of creation, like many people's creation stories all over the world. When colonization happened, they bastardized the sacredness of our places. They took away the places that we hold dear to us. And that really is what colonization does. We believe that colonization, first attacks the sacredness of the land and takes us away from those sacred places. And then takes away the sacredness of women and treats it as they do the private land ownership that they have created on our territories. Because of this private land ownership, we have been taken away from many of our sacred places. One of the places that we've been fighting for is the West Berkeley Shell Mound. The West Berkeley Shell Mound, or one of our places that along the waterway, that has been there for thousands and thousands of years, that's older than the pyramids of Egypt, is in danger of being developed on, because private land ownership has more rights than our ancestors in the ground.
Well, we've run our course. You're just going to have to find out more about the story that was about to be told from our land back sister, who, yeah, it's just such important work. So you can get all of this, the pieces that we didn't play, couldn't complete. You can have them all to listen, to review, and to think about, to rethink Thanksgiving from Land Back Acknowledgements to Land Back by calling for Truth Be Told, 212-209-2950. Please call for this outstanding package of material that helps us rethink Thanksgiving and to deal with the myths of American history with Indigenous peoples telling it like it is. Truth be told, truth be told. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. Thanks for listening. So much more to learn. So stay tuned and support WBAI. Thank you.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan. And you.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you roam
this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see.